Welcome to the Bad Apples. This is episode either 7 or 8, and it's season 3. And I have a lot to talk about today. I have a rant on Comcast, of course. It's not your typical rant either, so don't worry. I have a Blender tutorial for you. I have some listener feedback and a couple of other things, I'm sure. So stay tuned. This time, I'm not even waiting for the break for coffee. I have a cup of coffee right now, so it's one of those episodes, so hang on. Quite frequently online, so much so, in fact, that really my main phone that I use is a Wi-Fi phone. It's not even a cell phone, it's not a landline. That is how confident I am that I'm going to be around some kind of internet signal pretty much all the time. Between work and my apartment, it just works out that way that I really am not away from a wireless signal very often. The cafe that I usually go to has free Wi-Fi, so really, I just don't miss, I'm never away from a wireless signal. It's quite nice. Except tonight. Tonight at exactly 8:36 p.m., my internet service just stopped. And you're probably already thinking, well, okay, go check the cables, go check the modem, check the router, is it overheating, what's going on, you know, can you ping things? Can you get to your router? Can your router see your modem? Blah, blah, blah. All that stuff is irrelevant in this case because I've already done that last night and the night before. Yes, indeed. For the past 3 nights, my internet service has conked out at 8:36-ish. 8:30, 8:36, I think the first night it was 8:40. In that area, it just stops working. Bizarre, right? Okay, so I call my internet provider, which happens to be Comcast. Not that I am saying anything about Comcast by any means, it just happens to be my internet provider. Call them up, ask them what's going on. Now, the first night I didn't call them because, well, number one, I didn't even know who my internet provider was exactly because, I mean, I knew who they were, but I didn't know how to, like, my account number or anything like that because I'm not paying for my internet right now. It's paid for by my company, which, you know, would be nice if it worked. So I couldn't call them, really, last night. I didn't know who was on the account, how to refer to it, whatever. So the second night, I was able to do this because I got all that information, you know, after the first night. So I called them up on the second night and told them that my internet service was down and that it had gone down the same time last night. What's going on? And after a little bit of troubleshooting, which, you know, you have to just kind of endure, best thing to do in those cases I have found is pretend like you're not using a router. If a technician hears the word router in my experience so far, they will do anything to blame it on anything but themselves. They will say it's your router, your network isn't configured correctly, and then what are you going to do? You're going to tell them that you're running Linux? I mean, they'll hang up on you. They'll laugh, and then they'll hang up on you. So I just skipped the router and told them that the modem wasn't working. So they just had me unplug it and plug it back in. Obviously, it didn't work. And then finally, the very end of the call, when obviously she was out of answers, the very nice phone technician, technical support person told me that she just noticed that there was an outage. It was just an outage in my area. So no one in my area was online. I wanted to just go next door and knock on their door and ask them if they were online, but I don't really know anyone around here, so I didn't. But that was the story. What can you do? You know, I argued with her because the same thing had happened last night, which she found astounding as well. But that was her story, and she was sticking to it. So that was that. Well, then tonight, at the same time, like I say, same thing happened. So I call again, and interestingly enough, the same story. There was an unplanned, unexpected, completely surprising outage in my area. And before she even got halfway through the story, I told her that they'd already told me that story last night, and it didn't quite, you know, two nights in a row, didn't quite ring true on the third night. She stammered and stumbled and kind of made some apologies and tried to get out of that. And then finally she agreed to schedule a technician to come out and take a look at my modem, even though it clearly was not the modem, because I took the cable running from the modem and plugged it into the cable television, which, again, it's in my furnished apartment. I don't actually use it, but went ahead and plugged it in and turned it on, and I surfed through all the channels, and everything was static. So, I mean, clearly something's happening outside of my apartment. Anyway, technician, going to come out. Only problem is, suddenly, since it is apparently an area-wide outage, they're unable. The system will not let them schedule a technician. I guess the assumption would be that, yeah, I mean, if it's a big area outage, it would be pointless to schedule a technician to go to everyone's house. What maybe they didn't think of was that sometimes you're going to screw over someone three nights in a row, and you're going to have to send a technician out to see what's going on. So now I have to call back sometime tomorrow to see if I can get out of that window of not being able to schedule a technician, you know, all kinds of ridiculous hoops that I have to jump through to get what I'm sure someone somewhere is paying this company, you know, for unlimited internet service. So, not impressed with Comcast right now. And as I'm sure you've read or heard, Comcast is scheming and planning to do some kind of internet usage throttling, and I don't know when that goes into effect. I mean, I don't believe that this is that. That would be a little bit strange. But I'm just pointing out that Comcast, I don't know that they've ever been a thoroughly respected company, but they certainly do seem to be doing things to alienate a lot of their customers lately. And their phone technicians were very nice and everything, but I mean, you can just tell that they're having to tell you things that are clearly not true. And it's a pity, because you can't get angry at them, because they're doing their job, and it's a hard job, and it's a terrible job, but it pays the bills. But you still want to make your voice known and your concern heard, so you have to kind of walk a fine line there. But yeah, Comcast, not impressing me at all. Their plan to throttle internet usage is even worse. You know who has a really good analysis of that is Russ on the Techie Geek. He has some really good thoughts on that. I think it was like last week's episode or so. He had a really interesting take on it. So you can give that a listen if you haven't heard that yet. But yeah, it's a bummer. Comcast needs to shape up, I think, and hopefully I will not have to deal with them much longer. Hopefully there's another provider in my area that I can switch to. Okay, so enough of that. On to the next topic. Last episode, no, the episode before, I had a Blender tutorial, and then last episode, I said that I would have a Blender tutorial next episode being this one that you are listening to right now, and indeed, I do have another Blender tutorial for you. As you will recall, my interest in Blender primarily is for the video editing aspect, which is probably the least developed aspect of Blender. I think that in terms of animation, both 3D and 2D, Blender is, I imagine, right where it needs to be. You know, the video editing system on it is pretty darn good and pretty impressive. It's got node-based rendering, it's got effects, it's got transitions, everything that you would basically need. It doesn't have some of the finer little things that someone who's really used to a very, very robust video editor would expect or would want, but it's getting there. So the long and short of it is that I like Blender a lot, and I even like it for just editing video. So last time we did that, we edited some video together, and we added a couple of transitions on there and saw kind of how it happened. One of the big things that I totally forgot to mention last episode was how to get the sound and the video to actually play together. I mean, they play together by default, but you won't hear the sound. There is a button near the little VCR controls, like the play and the skip forward and the go to the end buttons, there's a little button with a speaker icon on it. You have to click on that to make it so that you hear the audio as well as see the video while you're playing back your video. That's just something that I failed to mention, and there's a picture of that on the screenshot tutorial that I have online. What screenshot tutorial? Glad you asked. Straight Edge Linux, that is straightedgelinux.com/videoblender. That's a capital B for Blender. Video, capital B, Blender. /export.html is today's lesson. If you just go to straightedgelinux.com/videoblender, that'll take you to the first tutorial. At the very bottom of that page, there is a link to the next page, which is export. So click on that, now you're there. Second shot is the one with the little speaker icon that I just now mentioned. But let's go ahead and step through this thing, and we'll talk about how to take the video that you've just edited and actually get it out into a self-contained video file that you can then send to friends and family, post it on YouTube, do whatever you want to with it. This is the part where you're getting out of Blender and just getting it so that you can play it in MPlayer, Zine, Caffeine, Dragon Player, VLC, whatever video player you're using. Now, the reason I didn't go through this last tutorial is because I dislike talking about exporting video briefly. Exporting is where it's at. That is where it all happens. If you skim over that and just say, okay, now send it out, then you're just doing a disservice to yourself. So you need to kind of understand what's going on when the computer says, oh, I've got some video, I need to write them out into a video file. What is happening is you are encoding that video in some format so that some player can then decode the video. I am not going to go through all that because I did a very comprehensive series on that very topic for Hacker Public Radio, which you can find at hackerpublicradio.org. And then on the left-hand side of the page, there's a correspondence. And there's also a series buttons. So either of those, you click on those and you'll see, well, if you click on correspondence, you'll see Clat2. And then at the very bottom of my page, there are the first four episodes I did for Hacker Public Radio were all on video codecs. Listen to that series. It's four parts, 20 minutes each probably. Great information about video codecs, what they are, how you too can utilize them to make your videos look good. If you go to the series buttons, then it'll just be listed as a series, like Video Codecs by Clat2 or something like that. You will find it, hackerpublicradio.org. So this is going to kind of assume that you have a little bit of familiarity with that. If there are parts of things that I'm saying here you don't understand, just go back and listen to that stuff. It'll do you good. Okay, so let's assume that we've just edited, we've thrown in some transitions, we've got some cutaways, everything's kosher, we're happy with our little movie. You know, you should obviously play through it once, sound on, kind of see what you think you're going to get is what you are going to get. And then at that point, you'll be ready to actually commit this stuff to a file. So down at the bottom right-hand corner of the way that we set up the Blender screen in the last tutorial, which is the sequence layout, on the bottom right-hand corner, there is a Format tab. And again, you can see all of this stuff at straightedgelinux.com/videoblender. That's with a capital B for Blender. You'll see it, and indeed, there is a Format tab, and down the side of this Format tab, there are various presets. There's PAL, there's NTSC, there's Default, Preview, Full HD, all kinds of different presets, and that is just going to govern the size of your frame after you export. So if you've got a video that was taken with standard definition video here in America, then it would be 720 by 480, that's standard definition. So you could click on the NTSC and that would kind of snap all your settings to conform to your typical NTSC video size. If you did it over in Europe, then you're probably looking at PAL, which is 720 by 576, I think. So it's just a little bit different, but something you'll want to account for. So you can click on PAL. If it's HD, click on HD and it'll give you the HD size. Full, I don't really know what they're talking about there. It's something like 1280 by 1024. I have no idea why they call that full or what resolution that would be. I mean, it's 1024. Sounds more like a screen to me, like a computer screen. But anyway, HD will give you the full 1930 by 1080. So if you're doing a lot of 1080i or something like that, that's probably what you're going to want to do. If you have no idea what on earth I'm talking about, you need to skip over to VLC. VLC is the proverbial Swiss Army knife of video. It's such a great program. And one of the tools that I use it for, both in Linux and on Mac when I'm working for a video company, is for figuring stuff out. Like figuring what, like someone will send me some video, you know, and say, okay, edit all this together. It'll all be different resolutions, stuff like that. Open up VLC, go to View, Stream and Media Info, or you can just hit Control I for info. And that will open up its own little window. And that is going to show you in the second tab over Advanced Information, that will show you both what streams are coming through and what attributes each of those streams has. So in my example online, in the screenshot tutorial, I'm dealing with some kind of variation of, I think, DivX video. The resolution is the very strange 512 by 384. I don't know where that came from. And the frame rate is 29.97. So you've got a lot of the information that you need right there. So the resolution being 512 by 384, if I want to stay native, then I would probably just want to, instead of going with those presets, I would want to type in my own setting for my Y and my X and Y pixel aspect or pixel measurement. I can just type in my own as well. So that's fine too. You can do that. Now you're going to have to choose what codec you want to send it out as, right? And you'll see again in the same little tab, the same format tab, sort of in the bottom there. I think by default it just shows up as JPEG because it wants to send out an image sequence, which is something that animators use a lot, and special effects houses will use a lot because they need they're going to go paint on these images or line them back up, you know, in their video editor. In our case, we just want to send it out as video. So if you click on that little pop-up menu, the drop-down menu, you'll see all the list of formats that you have available to you. One of them will be TIFF. One will be like an OpenEXR. There's Cineon. That's a really big one. DPX, another popular one. PNG, of course. AVI, JPEG, AVI RAW. And then you should see FFmpeg. And if you don't see FFmpeg, you got a problem. Well, you have a problem. I mean, you could always go out as AVI RAW, but I think you should probably get FFmpeg. And if you don't see FFmpeg in there, you're gonna wanna you downloaded the wrong version of Blender, or you've compiled the wrong version. You compiled it without FFmpeg support. So on some systems, as I said in the first tutorial, the people who are compiling it for you compile it without FFmpeg support. I know that the Fedora repo does this, which it annoys me to no end. It's the stupidest thing ever. FFmpeg certainly cannot possibly be, can't have legal issues. It's a completely, well, maybe it does, but as far as I know, you know, it's a free implementation of the MPEG standards. So as far as I know, it's still a brand of free, but I guess it's not as free as some people want, so they compile Blender without that support. Not cool. And I think, you know what, I think macOS does the same thing. I think that the macOS version on the website, I want to say, is compiled without FFmpeg, and you have to, like, jump through hoops. Although on Mac, you can go out as QuickTime. I think that's the default, so you could do that. But Linux is what we care about. Linux is what we love. FFmpeg makes our life easy. Go get a version with FFmpeg support. I'm positive that on the Blender site, the pre-built binaries there are totally FFmpeg. They have FFmpeg support in them. So if you don't want to compile it yourself, you can just download the binary, put it in your /bin folder, add /bin to your bash path, type in Blender, bang, you're good to go. All right, so FFmpeg is the codec, or is the format that we want. Now we need to, well, there's a lot of different directions we could go here. You can set your preset here, your 720 by 480, or if you've already done that, then you're ready. Maybe let's just do the frame rate next. Frame rate, really you can do a lot of different frame rates. What I like to do is keep it native. So again, in VLC, if you've looked in your stream information and it shows you that your frame rate's 29.97, you can type that in. If you shot it in PAL, it's probably more like 25 frames per second. So you could type that in. If you shot it on 24p, you might want to go out as 24. Whatever you want. It doesn't so much matter. I find it safer to stay native rather than trying to knock that down here. I would probably knock it down later on in some kind of transcoding program later on. Now, since you're kind of wanting to go out sort of as pure as possible, so I would keep it native. So I'm going to assume, since I'll just go off the screenshot tutorial, I'll say that my video is 2997, so I'm going to type in 2997. And this frame rate box that I'm talking about is right under the pop-up window, the pop-up menu, where we chose the FFmpeg option. So far, the only place we've been is in the Format tab on the bottom right-hand corner of Blender. Okay, so we've gotten the tool that we want to use. We've preset the resolution that we want to go out as. We've set the frame rate. Now what we want to do is choose the actual codec that we're going to use. So FFmpeg is the encoder, but we need to choose what format it's going to go out as. FFmpeg has a couple of things that it can do. It's got MPEG 4, it's got MPEG 2, MPEG 1. It'll do an AVI container. It'll do H.264, which might be really X.264, I imagine. It's got XVID, it's got PureDV, all kinds of cool things that you can go out as. So take your pick. I'm going to choose XVID because I like XVID. It's free, and it's good. It works really well. It's a nice codec. I use it a lot. And then you've got your bitrate right underneath that. You can't miss it. The default setting is 6,000, which is really pretty nice for most purposes. I mean, 6,000 is not too shabby. I'd be okay with that. But you can up it, you can down it, whatever you want to do. I like to stay high straight out of Blender, and then for the different delivery options, I will do a separate encoding using either FFmpeg or Mincoder, and I will go out, you know, one small for the iPod and media players, one fairly large for computer distribution, one larger for DVD distribution, you know, stuff like that. So that's just my workflow. Doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just how I have done it. So we're choosing the codec. Let's just say we're going to go out as XVID. Bitrate, let's just keep it at 6,000. GOP size, keep it at the default. You can play around with that later. It kind of depends on what the video is, and I don't even know if I talk about, I think I talk about GOP size in the Hacker Public Radio show. If not, I'll talk about it some other time. So then what we want to do is set the audio. And by the way, okay, so now we're out of the Format tab. Sorry, so we're in the same area as the Format tab, but two tabs over, there's a Video tab, and then 1, 2, 3 tabs over is the Audio tab. So you're going to see those, but you're only going to see those after you've selected FFmpeg. Okay, some of the other formats, like going out as JPEG, there's no video and audio. It's just JPEG pictures. So it's not going to show you those two tabs. But once you choose FFmpeg, you will notice Format, Stamp, Video, and Audio. So under Video, you'll see all the options for the codec. And now we're under Audio, and you will see options for the audio. And we've got about, I think, 5 different options here. We've got PCM, which is a generic uncompressed audio format. We've got AAC, which is the quasi-free format. It's free to use. I think it costs to develop. So AAC is pretty compatible. I mean, if you think about it, I'm pretty sure it's one of the default formats for like iPods and all that other stuff. So it's fairly ubiquitous now. There's AAC3, which you're probably not going to really need straight out of Blender, but you could do it if you're going out for like DVD stuff. MP3, I think we've all heard of that. MPEG-2, I think what they're saying there is that they're going to mux the audio and the video together, I imagine. I don't know, I've never really used MPEG-2 audio before. And you got your bitrate that you can set, do whatever you want to do there. Again, I like to keep it high and cut it down later, but however you want to do it, it's fine. And once that's set, you're kind of set up to go in terms of your codec settings. And now all you have to do is configure Blender to send out what you want it to send out to a file somewhere on your computer. Okay, so we'll take a breath. All we've done right so far, we've looked down at the right-hand corner of Blender. We've seen the little tabs that starts with format, and then it says stamp right next to it. But once you, after you choose FFmpeg, it introduces two new tabs, video and audio. And that's where we've been playing around. That's practically, I don't think we've touched anything else so far, okay? So that's just the far right-hand control set. And this is at the very bottom of the screen in the default sequence setting. Okay? So you should know this from the last tutorial. You should be looking at basically that setup already. And if you don't, just go back to the first tutorial, step through it, and you'll catch up. All right, so now we're going to tell Blender what we want it to render or export and where we want it to dump it. Okay, so the first thing is, this one's kind of hard to miss. There's a big pink button labeled anim, A-N-I-M. It's for animate. Now, we haven't animated anything. We're only doing video. But we still need to tell it what we want to export, because this is where it's going to be exporting from. So this is just right to the left of the format area, of that little format stamp video audio section. There's an anim and bake tab. So under anim, there's a big pink button, anim, and then under that is do sequence and do composite. We want sequence. Okay, we don't want composite because we haven't animated anything. We don't have 3D elements or anything like that. We want it to take whatever's in the sequence window and export it frame for frame into a new self-contained file. So you're going to click that, and it's going to turn dark gray as opposed to the light gray that it is right now. Okay, moving further to the left, we're going to skip the render tab, believe it or not. Just skip over that. That's the area where we will go at some point in the future to tell Blender how to actually process the data. And, like, does it use its own CPU, or does it use someone else's CPU, or both, etc., etc. So we're going all the way to the left now. And this is all on that bottom panel. And now we're on the very first group of controls. And it's labeled, the tab for this is labeled output. And there, the default is /tmp, your temp directory, which everyone has writing privileges to. You can change it. In my tutorial, I didn't really bother. I don't know why. I didn't. You can change it to, you know, /video/whatever. You can name the file. So in my tutorial, I said /temp/space export. And then I would probably do .xvid or something like that. I think in my tutorial I did a .avi. I don't really remember why I did that, but you can just do .xvid is fine. That's what I would do in real life. And so that's going to save our output to, in this case, /tmp. And it's going to save the file as /export.xvid or .avi, whatever you choose. Okay, so that's easy enough. And now we need to tell Blender what of the video we want to export, because there are times where you might not want to export the entire movie. Maybe you've got an hour of footage and you realize that really all you want to see at this moment is the opening segment of the film. And you just kind of want to give it a once over, look at it, kind of get a feel for it, see how it's coming along. So you can set your in and out range just so that it only exports, you know, a portion of the video. And believe me, if you're working on a big project, that's a must. It would be ridiculous to force the user to export the entire movie every single time they want to take it to another computer or maybe burn it to a disk or something. You know, I mean, you want to see segments of your work. So that's why this exists. So the way to find out the range that you want to export is to simply move your playhead all the way to the ending of your sequence. Once that's there, you will see right just to the left of the little VCR play and stop and record controls, you'll see a number. And in my example, it's 486, and they're telling us frames here, 486 frames. So that's how long your video is. So if you started at zero and edited nonstop, right now I have 486 frames, which is very, very short. If you're actually doing a project, it'll probably be a lot longer. Even if it's like a five-minute video, it's going to be a lot longer than 486 frames. But anyway, in this example, it's 486. Okay, so then, again, to the left, stepping left again, there's a start and an end button. And by default, it starts at 1 and ends at 250. So instead, we will say, okay, start at 1 and end at 487. I like to include one extra frame just so that I'm not stopping on, you know, the very last, you know, you don't want to stop on the last frame. Usually you want it to go black. So that's what I like to do, just out of habit, whatever you want. Or if you decide, oh, well, I only need the first half because that's the part I want to look at, then you can set your own, you know, 243 frames or whatever. Once that's set, you're ready to go. And you click that big pink ANIM button, the animation button, the animate button. Click that, and it will start to render. How do you know it's rendering? How do you know it's actually writing the stuff out to a file? You will see it. A big window will pop up on your screen, and it will go frame by frame through the video as fast as it possibly can, which isn't necessarily very fast. It really depends on how many effects you've got on your video, how many transitions you've got going on, how many cuts you've got, how long it is, what kind of processor you have, how efficient Blender is seeing your processors, different chips, you know, AMD versus Intel versus PowerPC. They're going to behave differently, and they deal with threads differently and everything like that. So there's a lot of variables here. You might be in for a night of rendering, or you might just have to wait around for 5 minutes. It really, really depends. But generally, as long as you're seeing some motion in that window, it's probably working and doing what you're asking it to do. And once it's finished, whether that's, again, all night or all week or a quick 5 minutes, you can go out to your file manager, whatever it might be. I'm using KDE 4.1, going over to Dolphin here, type in /TMP, and voila, there it is, space export.avi in my screenshot. In real life, it would be .xvid. I don't know why I said AVI. I mean, I could use AVI. It's a container file. It's fair, whatever, but realistically, I would have said xvid. So space export.xvid. And there it is. I can open it up. I can watch it in MPlayer. The sound should be there. The picture should be there. Everything should be great. And it's self-contained, so I can post it online. I can send it to friends. I can do whatever I want to with it. It is video that I have created in Blender and exported out of Blender for the world to see. And that's it, man. I mean, that is... You know, people say, oh, there's no just basic editing application. Well, actually, yeah, there is. There's Blender, and it's not necessarily that basic, but it can be, as you can see. I mean, for really light editing, Blender is that's where I go. I do not mess with any other application. And some of those other applications are great, really, really cool. But Blender is, you know, it's very well established. It's going, it's really going far. I think that in terms of professional video editing, on Linux for consumers or prosumers, I think Blender is going to be the one to kind of come in and make it all happen. Well, either that or Kden Live or both, but Blender certainly is a lot of fun to play around with, and you know, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's a lot of clicks and a lot of buttons and a lot of settings, but that's going to be true for anything that you want control over. You know, I mean, there might be some applications out there that maybe does make it really easy for you, but you know, you're also just kind of, you're just letting it do the work for you, and you're not going to be able to guarantee, you know, the quality and stuff like that. So Blender gives you a lot of control, and as long as you follow my very well done tutorials, you will be able to use it powerfully and well and produce some really interesting things. Okay, so eventually I'll do another Blender tutorial, I'm sure. But for now, I think we've gotten from bringing video in, editing it, throwing on some transitions, and exporting it. So have a great time using Blender. Good luck, and thanks for listening. I'm not going to say much about this because probably every other podcast out there is kind of mentioning it. But if you don't know, the Ohio Linux Fest is going to happen October 10, 11, I think the 11th. I think everyone's getting there like on the 10th, and then it happens on the 11th, or it happens on the 10th and everyone's getting there on the 11th, something like that. But it's happening, and I didn't get to go last year. And I didn't really know about it in the years previous to that. But this year, I know about it, and I can go. So I will be there. Now, myself and 330 and TJ from the Something Kinda Techie podcast is going to... We're probably going to have a Birds of a Feather meeting for anarchists in Linux. So if you are of the anarcho-syndicalist or anarcho-socialist or just anarchist persuasion, and you also are a Linux user, feel free to look out for that. And if you have any topics or thoughts or ideas that you want to bring to that, feel free to do so. Otherwise, I assume that, you know, it'll just be a lot of fun, lots of people hanging out, talking about Linux, you know, pretty much as usual, right? And I imagine there will be various things that take place. Chad Wallenberg from Linux Basement keeps saying, and I don't know if he's kidding or if he's serious. I hope he's serious. He's saying he's going to bring his guitar and actually play, you know, a set or something. So that would be really cool. You know, people are talking about doing like roundtables and maybe a live podcast or something like that. I don't know. Who knows? It's probably just going to be, you know, everyone just hangs out and has a good time. But whatever happens, it is going to be a good time. So if you can get out there to Ohio on October, I guess 9, 10, 11, and 12 or whatever, do so and look out for me. I'm going to be the guy with blue hair. Possibly purple. It just depends on kind of how things are going that week in terms of, you know, dye and how resistant it is to weather conditions. But yeah, so keep an eye out for me. I'll be there, and feel free to talk to me. I look forward to meeting like a lot of the people that have been emailing me and you know, other podcasters that I've talked to and all that other stuff. It'll be really neat. So yeah, definitely check it out. And I'm going to play a promo for the Ohio Linux Fest, which you'll probably hear on a couple of other podcasts. But hopefully I'm choosing the one that no one else is choosing, and it'll be unique to this show. Okay, so here we go.
Ohio Linux Fest 2008. Columbus, Ohio, October 10th and 11th. Admission is free!
Ah, it's listener feedback time. How exciting. Someday I might have like a little jingle or something so that every time we all hear that jingle, we'll get all excited and be like, oh, it's listener feedback time. Oh boy, let's all gather around and listen to what everyone has to say. But for now, we'll just go with an offhand announcement. Huh, it's listener feedback time. Okay, so this past week, I got an email from a guy who actually works at Sony. And this is the Sony that manufactures computers. In fact, they manufactured my computer right here, the Sony Vaio that I use. So he works at Sony, and it's interesting because obviously Sony is not exactly known for their embracing of free software. I mean, I don't know if they're known for, you know, not embracing it, but you don't think, oh, Sony, yeah, they're free software champions. But this guy is a free software champion, and he's really pushing for free software at his workplace, I guess. I don't really know if I'm supposed to, like, say his name or anything. I will give his first name, and that's all I'm going to say. There's a lot of out there, so, you know, you might think you know who I'm talking about, but it's not him. Especially with Sony and a lot of other companies, they come out with, well, here, I'll read what you have, what he has to say. Then we have things like our actual consumer products that I have started, that I have stated we cripple by design. Of course, you have things like our laptop that comes with Windows. So it doesn't matter how nice of a laptop we create, the user experience will always be impacted by the fact they have to run Windows on it, and pretty much the same Windows that they run on any other laptop. But more importantly, we have our products that we embed the need for Microsoft, like our Sony Walkman. The only way to use that now is with Microsoft Media, which really sucks and has a ton of limitations to it. Mind you, I've got mine working with Amarok, but that's beside the point. I like that little aside that he puts in there. We used to have a media manager for our devices, kind of Sony's answer to iTunes, but it was poorly designed and maintained, and so Sony discontinued it. I screamed, that's a perfect candidate for open source. If we are done with it and are washing our hands of it, we're not making any money off of it, and no plans to even try to replace it with another Sony product, so release the code and see what the community can do with it. But needless to say, it fell on deaf ears. So, you know, it's obviously really cool that he is saying this kind of stuff at his workplace. I gather from his email that he's not, you know, I mean, he's obviously not vice president of Sony here, so, I mean, it's just him probably trying to convince his immediate superior, maybe the superior above him, to do this, and I don't know whose decision it ultimately is, but, I mean, the guy's totally right. You know, I mean, there's all this code out there that companies aren't even making any money off of. They're just included with the device. I mean, when was the last time, for instance, that you received or that you bought a printer or a scanner or a digital camera, and they always have that stupid bundled media image manipulation software? You know, they've got the little application that will do basically what any other photo application will do, like, you know, Digicam or F-Spot, all these other things. And then they've got the application where you actually import the stuff, you know, like an image, like a scanning interface, things like that, that Sane will do for you. All this stuff, and you're just like, where did this stuff come from? Why is it so bad, and why are they shipping it with the product? And that's fine. I mean, if they want to do that, whatever. I mean, I guess they kind of, in their mind, they have to ship an interface product with it so that someone can't say, oh, well, you sold me the device and no way to talk to it. Now they've got a way to talk to it no matter what. But the point is that this software that's usually pretty poorly designed, you know, it feels unfinished. It's shipping with it. It's not making any extra money. Why don't they just release the code and let people hack on it and improve it and then use it and everyone benefits? And they just don't do that. And that's exactly what Eric is saying, I think, which is really cool. And hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll he'll at some point be able to make himself a little bit more heard at his work. Now, there's also something interesting that he emailed me about just later on, like a couple that conversation kind of ended, and then he emailed me again, kind of out of the blue, and he was saying that there's a file syncing service called Dropbox, and I've not tried this yet. I will probably try it. I think it's by invitation only, but I think he has some invitations, so I'm gonna probably hit him up for one and then maybe try it. But you can see this, and I'm gonna include this link in the show notes, I think. At www. Okay, you know what I'll do? I'll just include that on. I'll include the link on the site. So the point is that there is a Dropbox client for Linux. They provide the Fedora 9 binary, the Ubuntu binary, and the source code. Actually, you know what? They might not be binaries. They might actually be, yeah, they're RPMs and .debs, so they're not binaries. They're RPMs and .debs, and then there's the source code in a bzip file. So you can just compile it yourself, look at it, whatever you want to do. So it's pretty cool. It sounds pretty neat. And we'll see what happens with that Dropbox. But definitely check that out if you're interested, and hopefully I'll have more on that at a later in a later episode, as maybe I am able to explore it a little bit more myself. So that was really cool. Another listener feedback that I got was from a guy named CyberCod. Apparently he does music. I mentioned him last episode, I think it was. And so he does music. He did a remix. If you listen to Linux Cranks, he's the guy who did the Linux Crank remix. So that's that guy. And I'm going to play this episode out with one of his pieces, and it should be interesting to hear what he does. I don't know what he uses for his music, but hopefully as I do a little bit more setting up of my own audio setup, as I do more with audio, I will be able to start doing some tutorials or something on kind of assembling a proper music collection, but, you know, like an audio setup where you can actually start making some music. But we'll see what happens. I'm not making any promises. But CyberCod, yeah, he does a lot of music. He's got a lot of stuff online. I'll include the link to his stuff, and you can check it out. But first, you'll be able to check out at least one of his tunes today, this very episode. We will play out with a CyberCod composition. Thank you. Well, folks, looks like that's about it for me. It's the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed all of the stuff that I talked about this week. And good luck with, you know, Blender and Sudo and Linux in general, stuff like that. Thanks for listening. Keep all those comments coming. They're really great to hear back from people. Because if you think about it, podcasting isn't just one guy, you know, talking into a microphone, sending his transmissions down to Earth. It's about, you know, everyone listening and kind of partaking and, you know, the whole community and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool to hear from people. And I always email people back, so I'm you know, nice. So you can email me at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort.klaatu@gmail.com. And you can find the website at thebadapples.info. That is thebadapples.info. Yes. You can also find me at Ohio Linux Fest, as I said. If you go there, be sure to talk to the guy with blue hair and talk to everyone else. And it'll be neat to hang out and stuff. And I think that's about it for this episode, really. That's all I can say. So I will catch you next episode. Thanks. Bye.